Andy, my dude, have you heard of the magical website builder known as Squarespace?
Ugh, not another Squarespace ad. I feel like every podcast is sponsored by them.
Hey, don't knock it until you try it. Yes, okay, it is overhyped, but actually it lives up to the hype. Squarespace is like a website fairy godmother. With a click of a button, your site transforms into a beautiful masterpiece.
A website fairy godmother? That sounds interesting. What makes it so magical?
Well, for starters, those slick templates make anyone look like a professional web designer. Pick one, customize the colors and fonts to match your brand, and voila. Plus, the drag-and-drop fluid engine is so easy, your grandma could build a site on Squarespace.
Well, she did knit me a lovely scarf last Christmas. Maybe website design is next.
Exactly. And when you're ready to sell your Nana's handmade scarves online, Squarespace has built-in e-commerce. Add a store with one click, get flexible payment options, then watch those sales roll in. And when she wants to teach others her steezy scarf skills, Squarespace's new courses feature is just the ticket. Nana can set up her curriculum and enrollments and payments in a snap and become the next e-knitting influencer.
Ugh, wow, you really sold me with the grandma angle. Sign me up for that free trial.
Just go to thenextreel.com/Squarespace and transform your site into a beautiful Squarespace masterpiece.
Well, thanks, Pete. Even though it's overhyped, Squarespace actually sounds perfect for Nana's site's needs. Appreciate the warning on the ads, though. I'll brace myself next time I listen to a podcast.
Anytime. Let me know if you need any help getting that site up and running. Andy, can you believe we've almost hit 700 episodes of The Next Reel?
I know, it's crazy. And with all the other episodes in our family of podcasts, we are well over 1,200 episodes of movie conversation. It's really pretty amazing that we've gotten to have these in-depth movie chats every week for over a decade now.
And we couldn't have done it without our loyal community of film fans. Their support over the years has meant so much.
For sure. That reminds me, we should give the merch store a shout out. Buying shirts from thenextreel.com/merch is a great way listeners can continue to support the show. Plus, they get to sport our great designs.
Absolutely. I think sometimes folks forget we have a variety of shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more available. In fact, a great place to start is with a shirt sporting the Next Reel's logo.
We also have that classic Fast Times Spicoli Surf School tee, or the weirdly popular Rusty's European Tour shirt.
The one from National Lampoon's European Vacation. Why is that so popular?
Search me, but we have sold a ridiculous number of those. I guess there are a lot of Rusty's taking trips to Europe?
We're always adding new designs based on movies we've covered, like our brand new design for A Streetcar Named Desire, featuring a streetcar named Desire. So if you want to rep your love of TNR and films, head to thenextreel.com/merch.
Every purchase helps us continue to have these weekly in-depth conversations. So visit thenextreel.com/merch today.
And as always, thanks for listening and being a part of the Next Reel community. We've got lots more great movie chats coming your way.
Hello, and welcome back to Sitting in the Dark, the monthly True Story FM podcast about horror movies. I'm joined here today by my favorite co-host. Hold on. Oh, sorry, guys. This is Applebee's customer service. I've got to take it. I'll be right back. I'll let my co-host vamp for a second. Hello, boys and girls. Chop of the morning to you, and welcome back to another chilling dead zone of Sitting in the Dark. I'm your ghost host, Vomis Wesley Pest the Turd. But don't worry, kiddies, I'm not alone in the dark. As they say, four dads are better than one. First up to bat, the kind with wings, is the podcast daddy himself, Pete Fright. I mean, Pete Wright. One more good news. Then extra bleed all about it. We're also joined by the diabolical genius Vile Orson. I mean, Kyle Orson! And of course, the morgue, the barrier. So let's also welcome Slay, Die, and Flea. I mean, Ray Delancey. Oh, and it looks like my dead half is finished with his moan call. So I'll hand the microphone back to him. Have a good podcast and pleasant screams. Hi, guys. Welcome. Oh, say hi, Kyle. Say hi, Ray. Say hi, Pete.
Hi.
Hi.
Do I have to wear this bear costume for the whole show? Or
just I didn't give you the right amount of weird powder. I've titled today's episode Lost in Translation, Deciphering the Unknown. Let me set the table real quick. And by real quick, I mean, my apologies, I'm going to talk for too long for a second. My overall idea was to take three different horror movies that deal with normal, everyday human beings having to interact with other beings or entities that are, in effect, speaking a different kind of language based on their own abilities, their own outlooks, their relation to our universe, or even just their heritage. And I wanted to avoid more obvious movies that deal with aliens or creatures and try to dig slightly deeper into movies that just don't have this failure to communicate as part of their plots, but instead are deeply interested in the confusion and terror of the unknown that these types of interactions can create. Films where the struggle to communicate and or understand the, quote, other are one of the main propulsions of the overall plot. And in these struggles, we are given tantalizing glimpses of the unknown, of other worlds, ideas, and ways of thinking. And for this, better or for worse, I settled on three, count them, three movies. The cryptid-infused The Mothman Prophecies, the alien abduction film Dark Skies, and the very human-on-human-based Midsommar, which shows us that even human contact can be an alien, as alien as the other two if you don't speak the same cultural language. Now, that was an enormous amount of talking from me. Before we dive into these films one by one, I'd like to ask each of my guests, does this idea make any sense? Does this seem like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, do you find the same sense of awe, excitement, and or dread when you deal with movies that are dealing with a different type of consciousness? Are you fascinated by the unknowns that these situations could present, or do you prefer more concrete answers to questions raised by films like this? Would anyone like to dive in first?
Me personally, these kind of movies, I have a very hard time connecting with because I don't believe in these things. It's the more psychological aspects of them I enjoy because I think that these kind of things are all in our minds in some way. So our mind is, my mind is what I find the most frightening thing of all time. So, you know.
So you're saying you
so
don't
do we,
need,
I guess.
Yeah. You don't need this outside force to bring in this type of uneasiness.
Right.
Is that what you're saying, Ray? Okay.
Yeah. I'm along with Ray on that one. I'm also not drawn to this kind of thing. These are sort of outside my normal thing for a lot of the same reasons, but also because it's like, I understand that the world is, I have a hard time understanding the world as it is. And so adding in, like, there are also alien intelligence that like to randomly make phone calls to you doesn't really add anything to the world. Like, yeah, I'm having a hard enough time just getting through life, not knowing there's other things out there that are just wanting to mess with us at random times. And also they're going to win. Like, yeah, okay, there's already enough forces aligned against me that are making my life miserable. I also need to know that aliens are doing it too.
So you're really taking all this very personally.
Yeah. Like, I really felt attacked by all three of these movies. Why would you do this to me, Tommy? Why?
Okay, Pete?
I am absolutely on board because I think what I have learned out of all of these movies is that the scariest thing in life to me, besides home invasion movies, is miscommunication. Right? Like the idea that we're trying to come to understanding, but this other force is malevolent in that it's not interested. It's not interested in communicating with me, and it is exuding its authority by not communicating with me at all. And I think that is terrifying. And I think, you know, dealing with it, whether it's an alien conscious or a supernatural consciousness or a cultural consciousness that is just not interested, in my opinion, and is going to use me anyway, I find that an exuberant expression of horror. And it's so much more interesting than like slasher, which I also like now.
Look how easy it is for people to miscommunicate.
Yeah.
And it happens constantly, daily. So yeah, that's, I like it.
Yeah.
And I really thought that Pete would dig it because this gets into these films, except for maybe Midsommar, are starting to edge more towards cosmic horror. Mm-hmm. That you're dealing with the indifference of a very powerful being that has better toys than you, has better control than you, and either wants to, as I'll say later, play with its food or not. Yeah. And it also falls back on that very biblical or Christian sense of, oh, you don't get it? It's because mysterious ways. Because God loves you too, and he works in mysterious ways, and it's not for you to understand, so just give it the collection plate, and we'll see you next Sunday. Yeah. So it sounds like we're sort of across the board, which is good. I hope that these films didn't torture you. I find them profoundly interesting, and two out of the three, I think, are very underrated. Midsommar is very... rated? Everyone likes Midsommar.
It's appropriately rated. But
I think
rated.
Mothman Prophecies and Dark Skies as examples of these types of movies, I think are personally really strong. There is more than enough room for you guys to disagree. And the reviewers also disagree with my... Both of these were around 55% Rotten Tomatoes, most people. But a lot of the... I read some of the reviews when doing research for this. And a lot of them, the complaint was, it's just a bunch of hodgepodge that is more interested in asking questions than answering them. That's what I like. I like looking, getting a little glimpse Lovecraft style through the door and not throwing the door all the way open, because then our brain would explode if we were doing this correctly. So that's my personal going for this. Do we have anything else that we want to sort of start to set the table, or we can start talking about the movies?
From my perspective, I had not seen any of these. I was aware of Midsommar and I was aware of Mothman Prophecies, but they had never done it. But I had never heard of Dark Skies before we did this.
So I'm with you too. I'd seen and loved Midsommar, but the other two I had not seen.
Good. That was part of the reason that I picked. There are ones, you know, like movies like Arrival that are maybe a little bit right down the line of it. Mm-hmm. But I always try to pick ones that I own.
So I don't have to interrupt myself right there.
Yeah, I see what I haven't talked about yet, and then I mold the entire dumb episode around it.
Wasn't there a Charlie Sheen alien abduction thing? Wasn't that The Arrival?
That was The Arrival, yes.
Okay, and so there's Arrival, there's The Arrival.
I think The Arrival was maybe, it was very close to Whitley Strieber's account of when Whitley Strieber, like John Klein, or his real name is Kiel, in real life, the Mothman Prophecies is supposed to be all a true story. There was actually a Washington Post. Oh, the Mothman story. Shall we begin? Mothman Prophecies, 2002, directed by Mark Pellington. And it is based on a book by, I believe his name is John Kiel. It's definitely Kiel, K-E-E-L. And he was a Washington Post reporter that wrote this book. The book itself isn't just about the Mothman in Point Pleasant. It's about a whole bunch of a rash of all of these sightings. But he says, Whitley Strieber style, that all of this actually really did happen. And he is
like,
no longer,
on watching the movie, he says this, that they've interpreted what I experienced.
He says they got it pretty close. Yes. No way is he saying, oh, there wasn't really ghosts. He's saying there were these entities. All of this stuff happened. And yes, it was product placement for Chapstick. He actually posited.
He did look like Richard Gere at the time.
Right. His posit, for the most part, he brought us the word ultra terrestrials. And they're beings not from outer space, but from a reality slightly out of alignment with our own. This is a quote, whose presence align with ancient folklore. So
the ones from Indiana Jones.
Exactly. Skull style.
Yes. The ultra-terrestrial hypothesis includes, but is not limited to, the interdimensional hypothesis, namely the highly speculative notion that UAPs, you know, what we call UFOs now, may reflect activities of beings from other dimensions that coincide alongside ours. So not from Mars and not from Venus, but instead this idea of doing the multiverse, in effect, way before the multiverse was being talked about. One of the things that I really enjoy about I don't know the best way to do it, because like I have thoughts and then I have questions. I guess that's how it works. That's called a conversation. One of the things that I love so much about this movie is the visuals. It is strung with a little bit of early 2000 grossness at times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Mark Pellington, before he directed this or his first movie, Arlington Road, was a profoundly successful music video director. So he's visuals first. And I love how, on this idea of failure communicate, can you read the signs? Can you speak the language? All the signs and patterns of the Mothman are in this movie from the very beginning. And he keeps finding that weird sort of almost backwards why thing in everything that he does. Things were set in motion before the characters had any idea. The very opening of Gear, when he pulls his phone away, when he's in his office, he's writing the word Mary and he's scratching in the why, the backwards why. That's the first of, I think, 80 of the kind of whys that you see. Also, when they decide to buy the house, they're standing outside, there's a crane shot, and they're both hugging each other in front of the snow, and the path of the driveway and the sidewalk makes the why. It's constantly, constantly, constantly there. And he also, you know, uses his camera to swoop over. The camera is used as like a force. Mm-hmm. It sometimes hesitates and then moves in very quickly, like sort of an animal would.
Like a moth?
Almost sort of like, like the world's aflame. And so I really find that stuff interesting. It's like it's almost like he's giving us things that no one else is seeing. No one's able to see it. And the Mothman is there from the beginning. Did you guys, A, catch that, I assume? And then B, was that fun for you?
I didn't catch 80 of the whys. That seems an exuberant use of why. And now I want to go back and watch it with a tip sheet. The thing I think is really interesting about this movie, first of all, it sort of shuns a clear passage of time. Like I was always surprised every time they came back and he was like, oh, well, it's been 2 years or something like that. Like it just was never... those hints that time was passing were interesting to me. And I think it works in concert with the fact that this guy's going through some stuff. Mm-hmm. But the other piece that I guess I sort of struggle with is because this movie also works on that layer of that horror trod so well, which is, look, it's an exploration of grief. And here he is. The movie starts with his wife dying. And then it goes through this, like, you know, aliens, but they're here. They're just a jump to the left and a step to the right. And you know, so I think part of the reason I struggle with the movie, as much as I really appreciate the visuals, is that it's a little bit of a hat on a hat for me. Like, I couldn't tell if he was trying to excuse his process of making it through his own grief by, you know, fetishizing Will Patton's house, or... If really we were supposed to be focused on the aliens the whole time, right with him. Does that make any sense?
I got lost at the very end with the fetishizing of Will Patton's house. What do you mean?
Well, his reporting work, trying to get over. Like, is this an alien story or a grief story? Is that better?
Sure. Can it be both? I mean, there's a reason why the Mothman shows up for Deborah Messing. If the Mothman is a harbinger of doom, she's got an undiagnosed brain tumor just waiting to be found.
Okay.
And so it's almost like he's showing up, and then the same way that he's showing up at Point Pleasant, the way that the Book of the Vampire Man, Alan Bates, who says it was before Chernobyl, before Galveston, you know, that the idea of the Mothman is that it is showing up not to warn people, but just because at one point the Book of the Vampire almost says, like, you know, that energy when before something is about to happen and the electricity, the hair stands up on your. So it's just sort of like a point of its existence.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. And I like it. And I actually came away from the movie really like pleased with my experience with it. Mm-hmm. And also wondering a little bit at the end, like, what do you want me to get with the malevolent force? Which is, again, is the point. Like, that's sure. That's the point. Like, the question is not answered. And yet it has some of the trappings of a movie that wants to answer those questions.
Sure. No, you're right. And that is really what a lot of the reviewers, as I mentioned before, said.
Yeah.
They didn't say it like that, but they all could have said, so what then? this can't be a true story because ghosts aren't real. And so like, right. What are we doing here? But a lot of these things, I mean, these things were reported. I don't want to get into too much of what they think the Mothman might have been, which was, spoiler alert, a bird. Like a gigantic crane with red eyes that can spread and look like it's 10 feet tall, but we don't need to go there. That was found out way later. What about you, Kyle and Ray? Did any of that idea, did the idea of this split between a real movie about grief and then all of these paranormal things going on, did it seem cohesive to you, or did it just seem like Pete said hat on a hat, like just throwing ideas together?
The story itself and the way it was presented was intriguing to me, particularly the traumatic aspect of it, the way he's dealing with the loss of his wife and the way all these other people are dealing with their own traumas, because everyone else is different. There's nothing that connects these people, the movie said. But I find that interesting. Will Patton was my favorite part of this movie because I liked seeing how this experience just snowballs in his life and until he's dead. So I thought that that was I thought that was interesting. As far as the mythos of the Mothman, that stuff, like I said before, doesn't interest me as much. But the overall, the movie just felt overly Hollywood to me, just very synthetic, and I had a difficult time getting into it. Also, because the town that they shot in, I used to live in.
And that's right.
Like, I see you walking outside, and then you walk in that building, and that's not what it looks like inside that building.
So was that big, like, she's my gal on the side of the brick building? Is that there?
That I don't know. I don't recall that, but the bridge. Okay.
The bridge
that shows up in that movie, like, I would cross every day, you know?
Yeah.
The bridge that was clearly destroyed, so obviously destroyed and doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
It doesn't exist anymore.
And that bridge, just for the record, did really happen. The town people reported seeing all of these weird things, crazy things over and over and over again, and then it all led to the bridge. Or the bridge also happened. It's another way of saying that. Yeah. I like, Ray, that you, and Kyle, I want to go to you, but Ray, I like that you liked Will Patton's character. He's got a really interesting arc because he's the one character that, there's a way to read it. He does go through the looking glass. He's the one that gets to know. The first thing, before he walks out to die of exposure, however that works, the first thing he says is, "I can't believe I got through." That's the first thing he says. That can be taken as because the phone is having trouble, or he's already somewhere else. Mm-hmm. He is on a different plane of understanding, because that's when he says he was right. He was right about everything. He's having this real connection with Indrid Cold and pays the price for it. I don't think this type of understanding can be had without either your brain exploding or your physical being can't take it. I mean, this is a movie filled with people bleeding from the eyes and the ears when they come into contact with it. It's almost like the scene in The Ring when she picks the fly off of the screen. It should be a screen. It turns out that it's an actual fly. That's so impossible. What's the very next thing that happens? She starts nosebleeding. Something has to break. And I think he goes through the looking glass so much that he pays the ultimate price for it. And maybe he's with Indrid. We don't know. Kyle, I feel like I've almost cut you off, or I've been trying to.
Successfully.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to me to watch this and sort of know of the time where it is to go, I forgot how much X-Files influenced culture. That, like, you could see the literal fingerprints of Chris Carter all over this, of like, we want a movie like that. Like,
right.
We love this. We want it like that. And so I see that. I guess where I sort of end up, it loses me a lot of times, is like, I've like, you and I have both read a bunch of Stephen King stuff too, and you know, old Herbert himself, H.P. Lovecraft. And so I'm like, the cosmic horror and the stuff, like, I get the vibe of it. I'm into it. Like, I like it. But my problem is when they try to take that idea and then make it bend to fit the facts of what actually happened to the journalism part of this thing. That's where it loses me, because on the one hand, you always, in both the first two movies that we're talking about here, has the crazy old man. Like, so you have to go talk to, like, the expert who, like, no one will believe him and stuff.
Right, who I'm calling the Book of the Vampire in both. Yeah, there's the person exactly, that has studied
and,
it. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, and lays out a bunch of stuff. And I've always find those the most interesting parts of any of these movies where, yep. like, you get to go, like, even if, like, this guy might be crazy or he might be onto something, he might be wrong about some things. And, like, I like that kind of stuff. But then to go, it's you know, these are extra dimensional whatever entities who are drawn to conflict. They're not going to solve anything, but they're just here to sort of witness it, like a moth to the flame. But then like, okay, yeah, I'm on board. And then it's like, and also it's going to call and set up a wake up call for you. Ha ha.
What?
Hold on. Wait. So it's an extra dimensional entity who knows that a tragedy is going to happen, but it's making prank calls and it's staring into old women's windows. Like, that's where I kind of go, what? Like, what? Even like this thing of, like, I can't remember which one of them makes the analogy of, the thing was about the mice. This was about cockroaches. So, like, basically, like, what does a cockroach know about? I can't explain it to him. Oh, right. Yeah. Like, that concept is on it. But, like,
right. That the line concept, is John Klein says, I think we can assume that these entities are more advanced than us. Why don't they just come right out and tell us what's on their minds? Book of the Vampire, yeah. Alexander Leak, which, by the way, is Keel backwards. You're more advanced than a cockroach. Have you ever tried explaining yourself to one of them?
Right. Great. The great line.
Great line.
Great concept. Not part of this movie. Like, I have such a hard time connecting that to all the things that the quote unquote the Mothman is doing in this movie of, like, randomly, like, sending calls, impersonating voices. It's like he's the Jerky Boys all of a sudden. He's the
Jerky Boys. Well, he's certainly Loki, right?
Yeah. Like, well, you see, if it was all like as well, I was talking about in Dark Space, if like you can, there's a certain personality you can ascribe to, like, what they're doing as opposed to, like, the Mothman stuff too. But if it's not trying to communicate, why is it communicating? If it doesn't have a message, why is it sending messages? Like, that stuff was the disconnect for me, where I was like, I understand that we're not meant to know and it's above our intelligence stuff too, but then none of the facts sort of, like, line up with that interpretation, where it's just like weird things are happening. Like, they're here to just watch because, hey, you know, they're about to see something really cool. A bridge is about to go up. They don't get to see that every day. So, but then it's like, but I'm also going to, like, tell you what's on the page of the book. But why?
I like the comparison that Pete just made of Loki. I completely understand the frustration for that and feeling like it doesn't line up. And it does. I mean, the toss away line is their motivations aren't human. That we can't look at this as a way of, they're not coming to warn us. They're just sort of hanging out. One of the big things that he says, and a bunch of people repeat,
but also we're going to ring this guy's doorbell three times in a row.
But I think that maybe that was a part of Will Patton's journey. I'm willing to bend around the movie instead of making the movie bend to a certain kind of plot, in that we don't understand. I love the window washer comparison.
Yes. Another great set.
Yeah, says those, let's see, the line is...
Oh, yeah, they can see the car accident.
See that window washer up there. If there was a car crash 10 blocks away, they could see it. That doesn't mean he's God or even smarter than we are, but from where he's sitting, he can see a little further down the road.
Yeah.
That is also compared to a thing that people say repeatedly, I will see you in time. It's not, I will see you later. I will see you in time. I think that Indrid Cole or whatever that entity can do is see all of these things. And if you can see everything all at once, you're not seeing it as a tragedy. I don't think that that's why he's not warning people. I think that he's a trickster. He can do weird things. And any other kind of motivation that we're trying to give him is human.
You know what's funny? Kyle said something that made the movie worse for me. And I think I was on board and then Kyle said something.
Yeah.
It's the idea that I didn't put my finger on, but the moment you said that this was, that the collapse was real, that's when I started having some issues, because taking the sort of psychographical experience of the thing and making it this sort of historiographic metafiction that now fits facts, suddenly makes the movie a little bit less than. Like, I sort of liked it before I knew that this was a way that they justified the bridge collapse, or didn't justify the bridge collapse.
Well, the bridge collapse really happened, and all of these reports really happened.
That's the
whether
thing
they
that
saw
I
did, them that, or not, but there was a rash of weird sightings.
And okay, so that was my question. They saw the weird sightings of the Mothman. That's this could be a documentary, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
There were real people who saw the Mothman.
Yes.
And that's what, man, this movie is so weirdly troubling for me for all of these reasons.
Yeah. It is purported to be, I mean, he has gone down. He has never backed down from these things that really happen.
Yeah.
Another thing that I like about it is that this movie has an interesting conversation with mirrors. The idea of viewpoint and being able to see different ways of looking. If you can look at Inside Mirror Pick and share that, Pete.
Inside Mirror Pick.
Correct.
I'm on the ball.
So this is when he's in his hotel room. And Pete will put these in the show notes later so everyone can play along. This will be called Inside Mirror. This is, he's just looking in the reflection. He looks up from the scene and looks right at himself. Do you see anything interesting about that picture?
Yeah, I see his wife in the back.
Mm-hmm. That's the photo.
That's the photo that he puts in the corner.
Right.
It's impossible. The photo is reversed. We're seeing through the mirror as if it was a window. This is not his reflection. We're seeing, because his photo, he puts the photo on the upper left side of the mirror. And that's not her picture. That's the reverse of her picture. We are seeing through the mirror as if it's a window. And I think that's the idea of, like, the Mothman watching him. That there's other ways of seeing what's going on.
This is like Mothman security footage.
Right. So then,
let me ask you this then. Do you think it's possible, you know, there's that scene where it shows him smashing his head into the mirror. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that that was not him? That wasn't even a dream. That was like the Mothman as him, possibly. Because we know the Mothman imitates voices, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it could have been. I always took it as sort of like an impulse of like he's really losing his mind at that point and sort of a way to visualize that. And he's feeling like he's going down the rabbit hole, to use the exact same analogy again, was kind of that. But no, I mean, there's another. If you can look up IMG 3190, Pete.
And how?
This is the other one. It's very hard to see because I took this one myself again with my phone. This scene, and this is when he's talking to the second time that he's talking to the voice analyst, saying that this language isn't human and stuff. Everything that happens, and you guys probably notice, everything that happens in the reflection in the door does not match him. They put their arms down at different times. And then later when he smashes the door closed, you can see a blurred, ghoulish sort of figure. So again, it is the idea of right outside of our reality, there is another reality that looks just like ours, but something is changing. Something doesn't line up.
I think I finally just locked in on what you're saying about this movie, and in a good way, because it actually weirdly, I'm so exhausted by multiverse stories,
right?
And yet, like, for some reason,
and this came a long time ago.
This isn't piling on.
Pete.
But I also think that that's why I'm exhausted because, you know, of the legacy of multiverse movies. But really, this one is the subtlest of the multiverse movies. And if I want to, like, it's pretty easy to watch this and see this as an alien invasion movie. But there's some subtlety in filmmaking here that really does tell the story. And I admit I didn't watch it close enough to see some of the nuance that you're pulling out of those sequences. But I have it up here and it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And Richard Gere could totally calm me down at that side. I wake up scared, man. Yeah.
I'll say, I would rather have Laura Linney at my door because I find Laura Linney very soothing.
Oh,
Laura Linney. Also think it's a really well acted. I think the performance is really good. There is some grossness. Yeah. Clearly, there was a love story largely cut out of it. When he comes back into town and they meet at the parade, they are clearly running into a lover's embrace that everything else has been cut out of. That's fine. That's a 2002 problem. And sure. I like it better without. I mean, I think that they probably took it out because people were like, wait, but he's still in love with his wife. What's going on? This is gross.
But and again, that also explains why I have trouble with time passing, right?
Right.
Because it feels like there are things that were just snipped out now.
Yes. I would like to say that that's maybe how the Mothman would see it. is there, let's see, I think the phrase, I love it when Richard Gere says to Book of the Vampire, Alexander Leake, don't you need to know? And what's his name? Looks, he recoils, and I think he's seeing his own crazy now in Richard Gere. And you remember what he says? I think it's chilling. We're not allowed to. That's his answer. We're not allowed to know. It's those kind of lines. I think there's, for all of the messiness of the movie, there's also a nice economy of lines sometimes where it's, this is what I want out of a locked box mystery is just enough tantalizing glimpses of the other side. And that just keeps me coming back. So
yeah, on the other side, as a screenwriter, that is a real get out of jail free card for yourself.
Totally. So is Christianity. You
can be like, I can do whatever weird stuff I want because it doesn't have to make sense.
I completely understand, and I'm turned. I don't see the card trick in that. I see purpose, but. Again, I'm looking from the other side of the mirror. you know what I mean? I'm already in the boat for this movie. And so I will go along and say, like, you know, I like that we, I mean, because he also gets things wrong. He misreads the chemical plant completely and everything lines up. So that is the reason. I know it doesn't sound like everyone was a fan of this movie. I totally get it. But you understand maybe why I picked it as a good failure to communicate, a movie filled with signs, portents, and potentially another language at times that we just can't figure out.
Well, I can say, even though I'm coming off as the curmudgeon of the quartet here, I like this movie the best of the three.
Oh no. This doesn't bode well at all.
Nope. Here we go.
Also, one other look behind the scenes, I was because you know there's always that the frame, the movie keeps fuzzing out, like it's like the movie itself is becoming electricity. And I wrote down in my notes, because I rewatched it just yesterday, and I was like, oh, it's saying like electricity is like a force that is around us all the time and we can't see it. That's like the Mothman. Lead with that. Forgetting that Alexander Leake says that exact phrase later on in the Book of the Vampire. Oh, there's electricity around us all the time and infrared and stuff. And I was like, rats! I out Book of the Vampire myself. halfway through, I was like, that's not the chemical plant, it's the bridge. Oh, shoot. I've seen this movie multiple times. Well, and then in the land of diminishing returns that this episode is going to be for Kyle, if we can, let's move on to 2013's Dark Skies, directed by Scott Stewart. I think this movie can be a little clunky. I think it has outstanding performances. I love the acting in this movie very, very much. Real quick, first and foremost, there is a potential read of this film being about the immigrant or migration situation in the U.S. at the time. A major immigration reform act had been passed that year, 2013, meaning it was on a lot of people's minds. And this movie is swamped in patriotic imagery and sounds. 4th of July is a reoccurring thing. Big scenes. Even if that was the intent, I'd personally like to look past that and look at it just on its own. Make it about the other and the failure to communicate. Agreed?
I absolutely agree. I mean, I see there's a lot of indictment of capitalism in this, which I responded to.
Okay.
But I didn't really get. I was just more like, "Hey, we got some problems." I didn't really get any type of immigration read onto it. Too.
Well, it's so much like, get out of our house, get up. I think it's like rah rah America. The whole opening credits is
conversation because I never picked up on it.
Is just American iconography of like it might as well be like playing apple pie in a baseball diamond. What? This movie, what did you guys think about this movie just on its own thing? And then we could talk about the potential signs, signals, failure to communicate. Kyle, you didn't like it.
I didn't like it. Nope.
Yep.
Did not care for it at all. I mean, part of it is starting out as like, okay, so it's just like a crappy American family. All right. And then now we get to watch them be punished and then have everything go horribly for them. The end. good night. Like, oh, thanks. Like, I sort of felt the same way even more than Mothman Prophecies, which is just like, wow, it's not only is everyone in their whole community, the way that the American society is built at this time, allied against them when something goes wrong, which is what we've seen how many times. You know, you get sick, your life, your career, everything could be over. But their entire community turns against them. And also there's extra dimensional entities who are trying to mess with their life too. And then everything goes terribly and their lives are destroyed. Good night.
Is it the lack of a happy ending or redemption for you? I'm asking because these are horror movies and this is a horror movie podcast. Yeah.
No, I'm not all about happy endings. Right. No. I mean, Cabin in the Woods ends with the world being destroyed. And I was like, I'm on board.
Thanks. Yeah.
It's sort of like the justification of it too. Like, I mean, my thing is like, there is a bit of the morality play of it. Whereas I feel like we're going to talk about Midsummer too. Like, you know, basically when stupid people are doing stupid things and they get punished for it. Yeah, that makes sense. That tracks. Like, you know, like you didn't see this warning. You didn't read the warning stuff too. It just has this, there's that sort of that tilt that they did. The sort of the hostile, I always think of as the turning point for horror, where I turned off of horror because it was like, oh no, bad guys are going to win. Good people are going to die. Villains always win. All these, and I was like, yes, that's what life is. I don't go to the movies to watch that happen.
So it's taking like away from like an escape for you.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, and just like, I don't feel like then obviously they wouldn't feel that they were, there's anything worse about them than there was about anybody else,
right,
that they get targeted by this thing. So that's, and we get into the whole, we don't know, like, this is my favorite part of the movie, once again, is like J.K. Simmons showing up to like deliver some hot exposition. And man, right, that is awesome. And like his philosophy that he puts forth of like is chilling. And I was like, ooh, I was like, boy, I wish the movie was that movie, because what he's describing sounds like a really good movie. And it's not at all what we're seeing in sure. before or after at this point. And, you know, once they get to the point where they break out the shotguns, and it was like, okay, I don't even know what we're doing here at this point.
For me, real quick, and then I want to spread around the ideas, is that for me adds to the horror of it. It mm-hmm. goes back to Mothman Prophecies, the line of, it's like you're just moving along and all of a sudden the universe says, you, I finally found you. That mm-hmm. is how life works. Mm-hmm. And so having bad things, like going back to home invasions, Pete's favorite thing, the movie The Strangers, mm-hmm. why did you do it? Because you were home.
There
is a lot of power in that for me, and the idea of just being this sweet, normal family, and then Robert De Niro from Cape Fear shows up because either something you've done in the past or just because he picked you, the universe of you. I find personally power in that, but I totally get that it's that maybe makes it less of a satisfying experience if you're like just watching normal people get punneled down, because as you said repeatedly, you have enough of that going on, see enough of that in life normally. I totally get
that. And I say, and as we're talking about, like, I'm with Pete on the home invasion thing too. Like, one of my personal triggers thing is like, why you got to punish the kids? Like, this poor, like, especially the younger one. Like, I really have, like, I have kids and stuff too, but like, over the years, it's gotten worse and worse now, where I see the stuff. Like, I'm enjoying, like I said, I'm late to the thing on Mike Flanagan. Like, I've finally become a Mike Flanagan fan. And so I've watched, mm-hmm. Fall of the House Usher, and I loved that, and I'm working my way backwards now, so I'm going through. I watched Midnight Mass. I love that. Watching Hill House, can't get past the first episode. It was like, I just don't want to see children being traumatized.
Do not watch The Black Phone.
Yeah, exactly. I saw the preview for that. I'm like, nope. I saw the trailer for Imaginary. I was like, God, I wish I'd never seen the trailer for Imaginary. Like, trailer is traumatizing me. So seeing this poor
kids. Kids is a thing. Got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Kyle, you just don't understand. Sometimes you have to pay the piper.
Weird.
Deep cut. for an episode that has not even aired yet.
I thought it was just kids.
Pay the piper is kids in peril. Thing, right? Here the aliens come out of nowhere and take all the kids away.
Right.
Pete, Ray, what say you so far?
Yeah. I enjoyed it. No, I get it. I hear everything you said, Kyle, and I just, this gets to that space between we were talking about that. And, you know, the whole vibe is Aunt Meet Boot, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
you don't know why. And that is the scary part. I don't care about the patriotic imagery. I don't care about anything else. All I care about is the fact that there are dudes in my home that are making statues out of my china in my break front. I never get to know why all the way to the end. The only thing that is resolved for me is that maybe there are more taken than we've ever even thought about. They're just going to have their way with us. And sometimes we're in an ant farm and we don't even know it. And I think that is a really scary concept, a terrifying conceit. And so on that front, I enjoyed it. Some of the individual beats, I think watching Kerry Russell and Josh Hamilton, the way, and even the kiddo, the way they struggled physically when they were being sort of taken over, I thought was really cool. Like I love like Kerry Russell trying to maintain a conversation while her hands are kind of being taken apart. I thought all those beats were really solid for me. And I guess I tuned in more for the fear of the lack of communication. I guess I knew that part going in was going to be the thing that was triggering. And that allowed me to buy into some of the other stuff that, you know, if that hadn't been there, I probably would have been more critical. Mm. I feel like I'm an island too, because I just looked at the reviews on this thing and
yeah,
nobody agrees with me here either. So
I do. I like it. You can see the connection, all of you, to the Mothman, obviously. Kyle already brought up the Book of the Vampire. What makes us so special? Nothing. There's nothing special about you. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You were hoping for a different answer, but this is beyond our comprehension. What answer would a lab rat understand from a scientist in a white coat putting electrodes in its brain, giving it cancers? Yes. I like a lot of the questions that this movie sort of brings up. And maybe I'm being way too generous with saying ideas or questions. I do think it is very much a movie about misread signs and signals, even apart from the family misreading the alien signs. The older brother misreads after he watches that cheesy porn on how to treat girls. The cop repeatedly misreads the situation in the house. The husband doesn't believe his wife when it says what she saw in Sammy's bedroom. They misread Sammy's sleepwalking. Later, the husband sleepwalking. Husband doesn't believe wife about aliens, saying we're not those people who believe in crazy things. Everyone misreads Sammy's bruises at the pool, and the doctor misreads Jesse's brandings. And the biggest misreading of all, the whole movie, is that the family misreads the alien's true target. It is not the younger son. It is the older one. Everyone gets everything wrong, step by step by step by step. Mm-hmm. And I just think that that's a cool through line, that no one is safe from this failure to communicate, that you try as you might, you're not allowed to know because they're doing their own thing. The Greys. And why do the Greys, for lack of a better phrase, play with their food? Why does the Mothman contact certain people with prophecies of the future promises of messages from dead loved ones? Why do the Greys put Jesse and his family through so much torment and terrifying games and visions? Again, we're looking for human motives. Not a fun answer, but it is an answer, and an answer that I personally like. We're not meant to understand. We're not allowed to. And I like that curtain being drawn. I like peaks behind it. But past that, it can never be truly satisfying. I want that itch that I can't fully scratch because it keeps me thinking about it. Because that's when you turn from terror to horror. We're dealing with something more powerful, more able than us. We're not allowed to know its true thing. We are being forced down the food chain. And that's really scary. You don't want those kind of building blocks taken away.
I like your interpretation of this. Like, I like the way you're coming from. I don't think these movies support those things that you were saying. I don't think they deliver on it, because like all the stuff you were talking about, I'm like, yeah, that is terrifying. That is horrible. Like, that would be fantastic. These don't really show that to me, because it comes back to the merry prankster of it all.
Right.
For me, it's just like, it's just like these extra dimensional entities, they're targeting you. They're going to take you. There's nothing you can do about it. Like that fatalism of like, you know, I stopped fighting them. Like, that was one of the most chilling things to me. And then it's just like, yes. Okay, guys, step one. Eat all the melon. And it's like, but what? Like, what? It's like the progression of it. Like, you know, when you get to like the branding and you get to the bruising and all that kind of stuff, like, okay, now we're into like, holy crap, like they're marking their prey and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, okay, we're going to set off all the window alarms at the same time, guys. Ready? 3, 2, like. So
is part of what you're reacting to that it feels like a cheat of. It's almost like they came up with a bunch of what might be scary and then just sort of threw it into a situation with no real rules while saying there are tons of rules.
Yeah, like saying like, oh, this extra dimension we can't know. But then they're following screenwriter 101, the most basic of stuff along the way of like of the slowly escalating to the where this is. As much as we're talking about alien horrors and we can't understand what they're doing, yes, but they're following the playbook of any anonymous type hacker of like you start out simple and then you just make it. And this is, I mean, like they're gaslighting. So right. It's like once you get to the point of like we're going to steal all the melon, then we're going to do, you know, like all the way up to now we're going to take somebody.
Yeah.
It's the same progression that a regular home invader, boring ass killer would do. So that's why the disconnect comes strong for me is like once they, you know, like the J.K. Simmons of it does not connect to me to the events of what they actually do until you finally get to the end. And the whole twist thing I thought was just like a twist for the sake of a twist.
Well, I think that's
actually mattered. They wouldn't have done anything differently if they know which kid it was. Mm.
I think that's really interesting for both of these two movies because like there's both the like does this fit as like a science fiction horror movie and is it scary? Because as I'm listening to you talk about it, Kyle, mm-hmm. like the things that they're presenting to me, the individual sequences on screen, the pixels on screen, was there anything in here that was scary? Or am I triggered by the meta terror of it, by the fact that this is like I'm scared by the ant meat boot part mm-hmm. and not the individual like scenes.
The for me, like both of the thing for the Mothman and for this, like the most chilling parts of it were where the guy was calmly, rationally explaining there is no hope. You can't do anything about it. It's terrifying and you're never going to know. Like that was the part of me that was the most like, ooh, chills at my back stuff. Like stacking dishes and like, okay.
I did. Sure. That felt like, kind of straight out of
the home invasion. I mean, like the fact that you can't, there's nothing you can do about it. Like they're coming into your house at night and they're attacking your children. Obviously, that is the fear of every parent.
Yep.
And the powerlessness of it. But then at the same time, yes. So the movie goes, yes, that's right. You are powerless to do anything about this. Sometimes these things are going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it.
And there's not enough there.
Thanks for your $7.
Yeah. So for me, I think that's the stuff that works. And that's the stuff like the powerlessness all the way from the individual character powerlessness when they're taken over and they, you know, their heads go back. I think it was shot well. I think it was performed well. I think that stuff worked for me better, I think.
But I liked it better than our next movie.
Oh wow. Man, this is my heart is breaking right now.
And now, in this incredibly successful episode, for our third and final movie in the series, we see how even human-to-human contact can blur communication due to language barriers, heritage, rituals, and symbolism in the movie Midsommar. But before we get to Midsommar, I have a cameo. I wanted to briefly talk about another director who is seemingly obsessed with this idea of hidden meaning and control and not being on the same sort of level of understanding, even just on a human level, and that's David Lynch. I did not make you watch any David Lynch movies, but for so many of his films and his TV show, Twin Peaks, they have these figureheads. Some are otherworldly, some are very human, which seem to exist in a world just hidden from view. And it is them that are actually in control. They seem to know so much more than we do, and we're only given tantalizing glimpses behind the veil. Here's a good example. I have a short clip I would like to share from Mulholland Drive. This clip where Justin Theroux is playing a hip young film director in Hollywood who is mysteriously called to visit an unnamed, almost comically overly obviously dressed cowboy at a ranch up in the Hollywood Hills.
Howdy. Howdy to you. Beautiful evening.
Yeah.
Do you want to thank you for coming all the way up here to see me from that nice hotel downtown?
No problem. What's on your mind?
Well, now, here's a man who wants to get right down to it. Kind of anxious to get to it, are you?
Whatever.
Man's attitude goes some ways, the way his life will be. Is that something you might agree with?
Sure.
Now, did you answer because that's what you thought I wanted to hear? Or did you think about what I said and answer because you truly believe that to be right?
I agree with what you said, truly.
What'd I say?
that a man's attitude determines to a large extent how his life will be.
So since you agree, you must be a person who does not care about the good life.
How's that?
Well, stop for a little second and think about it. Can you do that for me?
Okay. I'm thinking.
No, you're not thinking. You're too busy being a smart aleck to be thinking. Now I want you to think and stop being a smart aleck. Can you try that for me?
Look, where's this going? What do you want me to do?
There's sometimes a buggy. How many drivers does a buggy have?
One.
So let's just say I'm driving this buggy, and if you fix your attitude, you can ride along with me.
Okay.
I want you to go back to work tomorrow. You were recasting the lead actress anyway. Audition many girls for the part. When you see the girl that was shown to you earlier today, you will say, "This is the girl." The rest of the cast can stay. That's up to you. But that lead girl is not up to you. Now you will see me one more time if you do good. You'll see me two more times if you do bad. Good night.
So there's a couple ways to look at that scene. Number one, it's a bunch of David Lynch BS. I get it because he loves those kind of scenes. I love that entire scene because
why?
Because it's doing two things. It makes it seem like there is sort of this weird, dark plan. The people, well, what it does is there's always this feeling in Hollywood, working in Hollywood, that fame is based in part on some sort of pure luck. And instead, this makes it seem like it's almost a conspiracy theory of how Hollywood is really working, that there is a dark plan, that there is, it's not based on merit, it's not based on talent, that someone has this idea. We're not allowed to see behind David Lynch's thick red curtain. Instead, we're just told what to do, and we're not allowed to understand past that. I also love the specificity of the language. It makes it almost ritualistic. He says exactly what the director has to say, and then his use of the word buggy makes it seem like he may have been in charge for a long time. There's something kind of otherworldly about him. He seems like someone like the Mothman, like Indrid Cold, that I would see in time if I ever crossed his path. And in time means I feel like he's been at that range for forever.
Well, and that's how they lean in on that, because of the light going on and off and, you know, with his presence. And
so that's another one of those, like, they're speaking English, but they're speaking a different language. And one of them knows everything and one of them knows nothing, but is then sort of reduced. He starts so smart alecky and is called on it. And by the end, I think he's truly kind of scared and mystified because he got a glimpse of this other world. Did you guys like that scene at all? Or was it just David Lynch BS? That's also an option.
I liked it. I like that movie.
That was from Mulholland Drive. Will you be able to put that clip in the show notes, Pete? Thank you.
I'll put it in the show.
Good. Oh, that's right. You can do that.
Yeah, I'm driving the buggy, Tom.
Ray likes that movie. Pete, did that tantalize you at all? Or was that just sort of three minutes you'll never get back?
You know what it reminds me? It just reminds me that I often like what David Lynch is doing in film and dislike how he does it. There's the way these two characters are directed and the way that they're just the performative aspects of this are so David Lynchian that I feel like, come on, let's relax and see if we can get out of the Lynch box a little bit. And so I'm
the Lynch box.
I got so much out of like my Twin Peaks experience. Like I pretty much could see where this was going performatively, even though I love the ideas that exist in the scene. So
cool. Thank you guys for, what's the word? Indulging me.
It was interesting that Pete and I had a podcast that we did together earlier this week, and I was also going off about how much I dislike how David Lynch goes about his business.
Yeah.
I have respect for him, but I don't like the way that he goes about his stuff. And so, but my feelings are best summed up by stealing from somebody else. Because Dana Gould has talked about this too, and had the same thing of like early David Lynch, big fan of, now not so much. He said the moment came, and you can feel free to bleep this when you edit it, Pete. He said, I went to see Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, and I walked out of the theater. And we were all in silence. And I turned to my friends and I said, so I should just go f*** myself? And that's exactly how I feel about it.
Yeah.
That could be another episode title for this episode. Yeah. So you should all go F yourself in the dark. all right. Our third and final movie. Speaking of confusing rituals, we have Midsommar 2019. It's a folk horror movie directed by Ari Aster. It's a folk horror movie that's actually a movie about grief and breaking up. It's where a grieving young woman and her friends travel to Sweden town to join traditional and mysterious Midsommar festivities in a village. And everything goes great. No, everything goes very, very badly for them. One of the things that I really like, if I can go ahead and start this process. Oh, wait. So wait, Kyle, you don't like this movie. You are not alone in the film board. Steve Sarmento is legendarily another person that does not like the movie. He says there's no reason for it to exist. For a movie to be made, there has to be some there. Pete and I are both on the record of being deep lovers of this movie. I think most of this movie is a masterpiece. I don't want to change our relationship because of this. Do you want to say anything up front, or do we want to dive in to the mixed signals kind of thing?
No. Yeah, say, go for it.
Okay. One of the things that I like about this film is a lot of the signs and symbols are given just to us. That it's almost like that you don't make any sense and you will never notice upon first viewing. They're made to be seen the second time. And it gives that kind of feeling almost like that it's inevitable. What happens in the story is inevitable. And if we were able to read the signs and the signals that we're given as viewers, it's almost like we could predict it. For instance, Pete, if you could open up MID Flower Crown. This is in the very beginning, if not the cold open, you're seeing the parents. You find out later that they are currently being monoxicized to death. Look at that picture in Danny in the background, already wearing a flower crown, which, of course, you can take that away, which you could say, you know, leads to her being the May Queen. When her terrible boyfriend Christian goes into her room after this is after when she's mourning before they go to Swedentown. Pete, please bring up bear kissing. MID bear kissing. Look what's in the background. It's a storybook, but it's a blonde girl kissing a gigantic bear. Again, we remember that her, the person that she is kissing, will be, spoiler alert, everybody, sewn up into a bear suit before being set on fire. So, and those are just in the opening. So yes, that's a lot. I'm not saying hooray for this, isn't it? And I'm definitely not saying, look how clever I am. I've seen this movie many, many times, but I like that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, it almost seems like it's foreshadowing in effect.
What's not to love about the bear sewn up and lit ablaze? Come on. It's a real meat cute, yeah. What we have in that poster.
And along the same way, no one sees this but us. If you can open up Midsommar Tapestry, of course, this is the very first image in the movie, and this is the entire plot of the movie. From left to right, you can see the parents hooked up to the hoses. You can see death over it. You can see the traveling, the mourning, then the traveling to the town. Then you can see the chair that they use. The chair is flying. Instead, the people fly down onto rocks. And then you can see the maypole dance leading to a very hot sun. And that's the whole beginning. So we're not able to see that. We're not able to understand that. But that's the entire movie that you're given right before the movie begins. Again, I think it's like it's, but because we can't speak the movie's language yet, It is a failure to communicate. We cannot understand what we're being shown. Later in the village, just to get another tapestry out of the way, the camera pans right to left as they are crossing the village over a tapestry, and it depicts the future wooing, for lack of a better word, of Christian by the village girl who he has intercourse with. I don't have that clip on me, but there's a depiction of a girl seemingly mixing at one of the things her menstrual blood into a cup as part of the ritual. Pete, can you open up MID, darker glass? In the next scene, when they are all seated there, look who's, it's a little harder to see in this, but in the movie, it's you can see that Christian's cup is a darker shade than everyone else's in the entire scene. I promise in the actual movie, it is a little bit more overt than that. But again, another sign we're being given all of the keys to the kingdom, but we don't understand how the keys work and we don't know what the kingdom is. And it is a complete failure to communicate. One last thing I like to say, about half the time when people are talking Swedish or other languages, we are not offered subtitles. And even if you try to turn subtitles on, they are not given. Obviously, that is to help make the Americans and being our audience surrogates feel more alien in this other world. But again, we are kept on the other side of the veil for so much of it, which I think really leads to a lot of the horror. Ray, had you seen this movie before?
Oh, yeah, several times. I adore it.
So you are a fan. Okay. So Kyle, who's the island now?
Here my whole life.
I get it. Is there anything that did strike you about the movie? We're not necessarily just reviewing the movies, but is there something, you know what I mean, that struck you at the very least on this thesis of sorts that I am presenting?
I knew it going in that it was a grief. Pete and I have been talking this week, and I'd say I had just seen. I have a huge backlog. I'm only watching Oppenheimer now.
Oh wow!
And so that
spoiler alert, Florence he makes Pugh, a bomb. Yeah.
Well, hey, seeing Florence Pugh in that and this in the same week was like, ooh, Florence Pugh's having a rough time.
and then you watch Don't Worry, Darling at lunch, and you're like, what's happening to Florence Pugh?
Ooh, yeah. I'll be happy to never watch Don't Worry, Darling again.
Okay.
Again. I knew it was about grief. So like a strong opening, which I did not know anything about. Like I sort of like Midsommar has sort of, you know, penetrate the culture enough that I knew, like, I'm like, there's a bear, there's grief, there's the bunch of people die, like weird, you know, Swedish cult. Like I knew all a lot of that going in. I didn't know anything about how it started.
Yeah.
So like already, like there's this, I didn't expect this at all. And so like having heard that the terrible sounds she's making of grief as she finds out what happened with her family. Like, oh, that's so, like I'm already like that was a great thing in terms of like emotional investment. Like, okay, I get it now. Like I am on with her, like the horrible thing she's going through and the horrible person that she's dating at the time.
Christian so is
like,
the worst.
Like, yeah. Already there. And then from there, it's like, it just gradually loses me as it goes along until I get to the end. I was like, oh, thank God I don't have to watch that again.
It is. And the movie starts with a breakdown also in communication of the sister not being able to communicate. I believe what she types is, I can't, it's all black. Mom and dad are coming too. Goodbye.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. The only other time we hear the word black in that way is when the village elder is screaming at the black to get away as if the black represents evil. But so the sister isn't able to understand what the other sister is saying. Off screen, before this has happened, clearly the boyfriend is unable to completely communicate with this girlfriend that he wants to break up with, and now he can't. And she is unable to.
There.
Right.
Right.
And she is unable
to read the room.
Right. Yeah.
And she isn't really communicating well with him before the guttural moan part when she does call him. She's very like, oh, you know, nothing going on. You see her visibly holding back her tears. She's not being honest. She's not really communicating with her boyfriend. And so even before they get there, all of communication is a mess. And they are not really, they're all on different patterns and then are trying to sort of decipher what's really going on. She's talking to her friend openly. I don't think he likes me. I think I'm leaning on him too much. And then there's that meme of like, I bet he's cheating on me. What's he really doing? And instead, he's just like playing paddleball with his friends or whatever. He's just being a dumb guy. So I think all of that works along the same kind of thesis.
the movie works really well for me. And I think, you know, so much of what you introduced is the scary stuff, but not the principal scary stuff for me. The principal scary stuff for me is the fact that we're going to a place that is ostensibly familiar, right? We're going to Sweden, which is a country on a globe which we inhabit together, and we're just learning about how these people live their lives. And that should be the least terrifying thing that we could possibly explore. It should be the safest space to go just learn together and share cultures. And the thing that I think is so interesting about this movie is I never get the feeling that there's anything nefarious about the Swedish inhabitants of this village. This is just the way they live. And once again, ant meat boot. Their cultural beliefs are those that we will never understand. What the elder people, when they jump off to the elderly crushing rock, that is not presented as anything related to sinister behavior. It's just their belief.
She explains it. Instead of growing old and dying in fear and shame, we give life. We give our life as a gesture. In effect, they're taking more control over their lives as they get older than we are allowed to. Yeah.
Yes. And the thing that happens with that, and just exactly what you said, and the thing that's scary is that they're taking agency over their lives, and then their culture, their belief system, their worldview takes agency over the kids too. And right. I just love that as a thing that is scary. The act of being out of control of my own agency is the thing I connect to in this movie, right? I think that is a fascinating thing to explore. And the fact that it happens so, it's like the poet that's really good friends with Oprah, Maya Angelou. Mm. So it's like Maya Angelou says, there's always this thing. You blow on the skin to sort of anesthetize it. You bite the skin to take pain or to cause pain to others. And then you blow on it again so they never know, to anesthetize it again so they never know you were there. Blow, bite, and blow. That's what this movie is. The kids know that something is wrong. They know that things are awry. And they stay there, right? They're still there. I think that's a really interesting, interesting premise that they're being taken advantage of, and they don't understand it, and they'll never understand it. And it all of the misunderstanding leads, for at least for just the one character, to catharsis. And I think that's weird and cool.
You see her at the end of being cathartic of Danny, well, that she has come. There's a couple ways to read that horrible smile at the end.
I mean, it is, you know, acceptance and catharsis in the face of great trauma, right? Like these
definitely
rituals.
Is enveloped into this company that is this family that is able to, quote, hold her in the way that her friends are not able to hold her. That what is missing from all of her quote unquote friends is any attempt at real empathy. And that is what, for better or worse, this village does. When someone else is in pain, it's a weird kind of empathy, but they're all screaming. They're all thrashing. Screaming. They're all gnashing their teeth in an attempt to try to make the person that is going through something not alone.
Yeah. And that's the catharsis. Like, those are the cathartic sort of wails and the ritual. And the smile is that she's found belonging. And it's a weird thing. But the whole movie is about coming to terms with a outside experience of somebody else's deep belief. And the fact that it turns out she was maybe born out of time and place. And maybe this is where she belonged all along.
Sure. In case there is any wonder if the movie is officially really just about dealing with grief, go ahead and open up Sister in Trees. This will be our final one. I don't know if you caught this, but if you look back at the beginning of the line, look above in the trees, you can see the sister's face and I can't use my mouse as a pointer. Can you help me explain where the sister's, are you guys seeing what I'm seeing?
No.
Yeah, it's in the top left. Like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Count 4 people over from the left. There's a group of people there. Stand another 4 people. So it's directly above the second 4 people.
Oh,
all the way at the top
it.
Of the frame.
I see it.
You can see the sister's face, and then what looks like.
How do you know it's the sister? I see a face.
because it looks like the trail of the pipe coming out of her. One of her eyes is messed up, and you can see that the pipe that she taped to her mouth, if you follow that line of trees. So that is still very much.
If you go back and look at the shot in the beginning, it does pretty directly mirror what they create in foliage here.
Yeah. So that's just another sort of hidden little sign thing to show. You can get rid of that, Pete, to show what is really.
What if they don't want to?
Oh, sorry. Grief. any final thoughts about, I feel like I've kept you guys long enough. Any final thoughts about Midsommar that you would like to pick? Other than obviously the other things that we've already talked about, it's filled with runes and we go, those are runes, but no one ever says what they're made of or what they mean.
Right.
And we're right. before the ascension, descension, they're cutting their hands and rubbing them on rocks with runic symbols. No one ever, we're not even invited to know what that means. So it's filled with that too. Anything else about Midsommar?
Once again, I don't have the last word, so make sure that you don't.
I got something else.
Good, because I wish I had seen the movie you guys saw, because that's not the movie that I saw.
Fair enough.
I'm worried a little bit, Kyle, that you watched three completely different movies.
It's seeming that way, because it's like same planet, different realities. I'm operating on a different multiversal level than you, and I'm like our harmonics are not harmonizing. As a story of grief and stuff too, I was invested, I was on board, and then it just became a dumb slasher movie to me. It was a bunch of stupid kids who put themselves in danger, didn't recognize the saber, took a bunch of drugs, and then got killed for it. And I was like, yeah, I've seen this movie. I've seen this movie a lot. Like, you could add 2 extra hours to it. A 2.5 hour movie. I was like, yeah, I know where this is going. I know where this is, like, everything that's going to happen. And everything, like you say, they lay it out for you. And so nothing was a surprise. So I found the whole process incredibly dull, because I'm like, I know everything. It's just like I can predict what order they're going to die in. I mean, I know everything is variations on a form, and there's only 10 stories and that kind of stuff. But I just don't see what everyone else saw in terms of this, because to me, this was just another cult movie, just another slasher movie. And then by the end of it, I didn't, because all the main characters are so drugged up, I was like, I don't even know if they're aware of what's going on. Like, the interpretation of the smile thing, that was great discussion. But my thing was like, yeah, she was on drugs. Like, she was on drugs the whole time. Like, I don't know that she was aware of anything that was going on. Or if that's he was the thing, aware
like,
of
everybody was on drugs. Like, they were all doing it together. Like, part of the cultism.
Which lessens the emotional impact for me, because it's like, I don't know that they're aware of what's happening. So, like, at the end, I don't know if she even knows what has happened or what's real at this point. And at that point, then I don't care. So yeah, for me, like at that point, like I like the creeping dread. I like the fact that it wasn't during the day. Like, I mean, the fact that everything was in bright sunlight and stuff too, but I didn't see anything different than any other cult slasher horror thing that I've seen before. I don't know. I honestly don't know why people rave and love it. I'm not yucking anybody's yum. I just don't see what it is. And I read the positive and negative reviews, and I was like, boy, I didn't see that movie. So yeah, it did not work for me. I mean, it fit thematically. It fits here and say, I understand why you connected it to these two, and the whole idea of like not understanding what's going on, and by the time you do, it's too late, and you're already caught up in the gears of the thing, and there's nothing you can do about it. I understand that, but it's just I don't see why these people are raving about it, because I didn't find it to be any better or worse than the other two movies. I liked it least of the three, actually, in terms of like the thematic message.
That is definitely, of course, allowed and encouraged, and thank you guys for watching these movies. I apologize if it turned out to be a little bit more homework than discovering new pleasures. That is the risk that we take when we're sitting in the dark. For those that maybe did enjoy these movies, movies about the overall idea have a big part of humans desperately trying to deal with other or different kind of consciousness. These are ones that didn't make my list: the aforementioned Mulholland Drive, Lost Highway, Annihilation, The Hills Have Eyes remake, Jordan Peele's Us, The Final Destination series, The Vivitch or The Witch, Hereditary, and The Ring. You can look at those for further study. We did it, you guys. Thank you so much for joining me here in the dark. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Kyle.
That's me.
And give it up for Ray.
Bye, everybody.
And, of course, podcast daddy himself, Pete.
You be good, kids.
Thank you for joining us. We will see you next time, sitting in the dark.
I love the conversations that so many of our hosts have had on their shows. Steve and JJ on Trailer Rewind, Ray and Ocean on Silver Linings, even Tommy's short-lived No, No, Wait, Hear Me Out.
And so many films they've discussed started out as a book, a play, or even a TV series.
Well, now you can support our whole family of podcasts by using our new Originals page to buy the original source material used to inspire films covered on our shows.
Just visit thenextreel.com/originals. Your purchases made through our links give us a small commission at no extra cost to you and allow us to keep having these fantastic conversations.
It's a wonderful way to support the show. Producing these podcasts week after week require a ton of work behind the scenes. If you'd like to help support our efforts, try using our Originals page when shopping for books and movies that we've covered.
It's your one-stop shop for Amazon and Apple links where you can buy the book, play, video game, movie, etc., upon which the movie is based.
Original material for Trailer Rewind movies like If Beale Street Could Talk,
The Goldfinch,
Aniara,
or The Two Faces of January.
Or Silver Linings movies like Repo Men, which was based on the Repossession Mambo.
Plus, by using those links to buy books, Amazon and Apple show us a little bit of love, which allows you to support our family of shows with minimal effort.
Visit thenextreel.com/originals. It's a fantastic way to support the show and find a great book to read.
That's right. Head over to thenextreel.com/originals to find your next read and get started today.